standards, safety standards in our minds and what they do in Australia.
I haven't received any formal advice that that is correct. In fact, when I asked a number of people on the ground there about that very point, the response that I was given was that the assertions made by the Australian journalists were incorrect. So Australian coal mines do not have oxygen tanks contained in them because they are accelerants and could be very dangerous. Our mines do take include water, and so there's, to the best of their knowledge, Australian mines do not have food contained and stored in them. So, you know, I have no reason to believe that New Zealand safety standards are any less than Australia's, and in fact our safety record for the most part has been very good. But obviously that's something for another time to answer.
In New Zealand there's got two effectively dedicated mining inspectors on the books in the Department of Labour. There was a suggestion last night from Houston Wendy, Russell Smith, the commander of mine, that perhaps we need to return to the days where there are more dedicated official state mining inspectors. Do you think that's the case, or do you disagree?
Well, again, I haven't received any advice, nor have I sought any advice at this point about whether the level of mines inspectors we have is appropriate, but nor have I received any advice that it's been under-resourced. The only particular comments I've had is, I think it was back in 2004 or 5, the Labor government then looked at whether the number of mine inspectors was appropriate and determined that it was. But certainly I haven't received any advice that it's not.
Do you think we're now looking at a recovery operation rather than a rescue operation?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that. Our focus is to try and do everything we can to have a rescue effort. And in that regard, there's a number of different things that are occurring. As you're aware, there's a robot going into the mine in due course. We're in the final stages of drilling the ventilation hole that will allow us to test the atmospheric conditions within the mine. So, look, any talk of anything other than rescue mission, in my view, would be speculative.
Have you been given any information as to what the earliest time that the rescue mission
No, look, I mean, what the rescue mission is subject to the ability for the rescue team to be able to go into the mine. And the issue here is that they cannot go into the mine unless the conditions they believe are safe to do so. And that's a combination of their own activities sparking another explosion in the mine, or the build-up of methane that will be in the mine itself causing another explosion, even without any efforts or any agitation by the rescue workers themselves. So I specifically went around and asked the individual members of the rescue team to make sure that they were unified in their view that they shouldn't be going into the mine at this time, and they are totally unified in the view that this is not the safe time to go in the mine. They await a time where it is safe, they want to get their mates out, but this is not the time to do that.
You also asked this morning about potential negligence. I'm not sure when this is the time to be asking that question, but do you think down the track that this is something that needs to be looked at?
Well, there will be, you know, an inquiry, if not inquiries, into what has taken place at Pipe River. I don't want to speculate on the nature of those inquiries, nor what they may or may not find. But there's clearly been a serious explosion at the mine, and from there we'll need to understand better what's going on and why, and in due course we'll seek to find those answers.
You mentioned your own program this week floored around this. Is there going to be continued ministerial presence in
the Yes, Jerry Brownlee's staying on the ground in Greymouth and will do so for the foreseeable future. Kate Wilkinson, as the Minister of Labour, came back to be part of Cabinet and to brief Cabinet on her work there, but may return to Greymouth at some point. I'm not quite sure of her movements. From my point of view, I'll just be assessing that as and when it makes sense to do so. I certainly don't want to get in the way of rescue efforts, but I also want to show that, as I've tried to demonstrate in the last few days, government takes this issue very seriously. Every possible resource is available to aid the rescue.
Is there actually much the likes of Mr. Brownlee can do aside from, you know, moral support?
There have been one or two things. I mean, obviously we're interacting with different agencies of government at the moment. The Defence Department will be much more heavily involved as of today. There are others. So, yes, I think there is. It is important that we have our person on the ground, and Jerry is a very senior member of the caucus, reflects the significance of the issue.
So when are we expecting that robot to actually be in the mine and be able to take video or pictures and report back any sample?
I don't have any advice on that, but they were working on it when I was there. And I was asking them about how that process would work and how it's guided. It can't work on remote control there in the way that you and I might imagine that works because of the nature of the mine, but that's why they're laying fibre optic cable to give it greater reach. And it wasn't absolutely confirmed to be, but the impression I got was it would be very soon.
Have the experts behind the scenes told you what the chances of surviving a blast like what's happening?
No, I don't think it's been couched in those ways. I mean, there's no question it's a serious situation there, and that's the point that we've really been making from the moment that we heard about it. There was a major explosion there, and clearly the situation is a difficult one because people cannot enter the mine. So I wouldn't say they've speculated on that. There's a range of possible options, and our focus is to try and assist in a rescue effort.
The report back from the Select Committee on Electoral Reform is National now happy to support a $300 spending cap on third parties.
$300,000.
$300.
You don't get a lot of freedom of speech for $300.
No, probably not. Yeah, exactly. National is resistant to a spending cap in the first place. What's changed your mind?
Well, like anything, we wanted to get, if possible, consensus when it came to electoral law reform. I know not all parties are supporting it, but the majority are. And so there's always a bit of give and take. And from our perspective, we believe that a $300,000 spending cap was, if not our number one preference, a level we could live with. And I think allows third parties to voice their view and to have their view heard, but not in a way that would be overbearing on mainstream political parties.
And the trade-off for that, the threshold going from 10,000 to 15,000 for donations?
I don't know if that was the exact trade-off, but it was at least support from the Labor Party, so that there was bipartisan support, essentially, for what is constitutional law.
On Afghanistan, the Lisbon meeting, and there's an agreement now to start the transition, placing provinces in control of Afghan forces from 2011, not 2014. Have you had any reports on that and what the implications are for Bamiyan, which clearly would be a province that could move over quite quickly?
Well, I haven't had a briefing from Murray McCulley, who was obviously my representative at the meeting, but the most recent information that I saw before he went to Lisbon was that Bamiyan remains right at the top of the list as a province that can be handed over to Afghan control. So that process of passing over control is a high priority and one that we'd like to undertake.
You presume that they've brought that process forward now, that meeting to 2011, it could happen perhaps even more quickly than you did this?
I can't rule that out, but I haven't had a download from Mr. McCulley about that yet.
Does that mean that we might be bringing our troops home early as anticipated?
Well, again, it was two elements of that. The SAS decision about whether there will be an extension for a short period of time of a small group has not been made yet, and we'll at some point have to consider that. In terms of Bamiyan, we've always been working on a handover period, and we'll get some advice on that. I know that advice has been worked on. In terms of how the handover might take place. I mean, our major issue in Bamiyan has always been balancing that desire to pass over full control and to be able to leave Bamiyan, but not do so in a way that undermined all the great efforts of people who've worked there for such a long period of time.
Is our PRT there till September next year, is it?
Yes, but there's always been an implied residual presence.
Yeah. And that will still occur. But is it likely that September date may be brought forward so that the actual PRT comes home earlier, but the residual?
Well, I can't speculate on that yet because I haven't had a briefing on that, but yeah, certainly it looked like there were encouraging signs.
Just back to the electoral finance law, how quickly does the government want to progress that legislation? Because after next week's recess, there's only two sitting next week.
You don't know exactly where it's sitting on the order paper, but I know that it's obviously a priority to have that passed and in place before the next election.
So it will. You won't use urgency to pass through it all its stages?
There hasn't been the advice I've received, but I could be out of work, but I don't think so.
Back to the mining issue, I mean, do you think that regardless of the outcome of the mining,
no, I wouldn't want to speculate on that. Look, there will need to be an understanding of what's gone wrong there, because clearly there has been a significant explosion. Now, that is very unusual. I mean, if you go back and look at Trace New Zealand's histories, remembering that we have quite a number of operational coal mines in New Zealand, the last one of significant magnitude was 1967 in Stockholm. So I think it is a highly, highly irregular event that's taken place, and we'll just need to understand what the cause of that is.
And have you been informed in any of these briefings and in your talk with the company that there was any information that could have provided a warning that there have been some reports of build-up of methane in the recent weeks? Have you heard anything along those lines?
Well, I can only rely on the advice that the company has given me. I've asked them those questions directly, and the answer is they had no warning of this disaster. So they monitor airflow going into the mine and coming out of the mine for methane levels. There are methane alarms in the mine, and miners carry with them their own methane gauging devices. And none of those, to the best of the company's knowledge, indicated any problems. Certainly the continuous monitoring of airflow coming out of the ventilation stacks did not indicate any build-up in methane. So there's something we'll have to understand how that's taken place, but I wouldn't want to speculate. Well, I'm just not an expert in those areas.
Will you hold a board commission?
I wouldn't want to speculate on what the makeup of commissions would look like, but the very, very high level advice that has the Royal Commission tends to be for social areas, and when we had Cave Creek and the likes, they were a commission of inquiry. So essentially the same structure, but it's not about that type.
Prime Minister, Senator Paws have moved our sovereign credit rating from stable to negative.
Yep.
You were aware of that? Were you aware that was going to happen, and what the implications?
I was aware of it about 2:30 when I got off the plane from Greymouth, from the Finance Minister. I understand that the Ratings Committee met this morning, as they do every, which is some review of a few countries that seem to be today with New Zealand. My understanding is it's nothing, there's no new information, and in other words, nothing new has changed in New Zealand. In fact, the Finance Minister met with Standard & Poor's 2 weeks ago, and there were no specific issues raised at that point. But what is true is that they are reflecting on our total overall indebtedness, particularly the issue that the government's been talking for some time about, which is our level of private sector indebtedness, and the fact that we rely so heavily on foreign borrowings for that. And the recent changes to the Irish situation and uncertainty in the international financial markets have, I think, forced Standard & Poor's to reassess the risks.
On the budget, Bill English warned that there'd be high deficits next year and forecast growth would be lower. How much more austere will next year's budget have to be?
Well, again, we haven't started the process of even really trying to formulate what will or won't be in the budget. And we're totally committed to the $1.1 billion new budget spending increase plus or minus the 2% we have. I think quite clearly it is important that the government does whatever it can do to restore us surpluses as rapidly as practically possible. Now, that's always a balancing act between slowing the economy down but also making sure that we have those surpluses. So we are not going to be going into election 2011 campaigning on a lolly scramble. If Labor want to do that, they're welcome to do that. But we won't be doing that because we're committed to a $1.1 billion spend.
The figures up today from Stats NZ on migration, more Kiwis leaving for Australia. Do you think they're voting with their feet?
No, I mean, I think they've opened with their feet on Saturday night in Mana, and they're voting in support of the national government. In terms of the overall migration numbers, I haven't looked at the data for a few weeks, but last time I looked at it, they were slightly higher than the recent months, but overall significantly less than 2006-2007.
Are you worried?
No, there'll always be some migration patterns. I mean, if you look in Australia, unemployment's actually been rising. It rose to 5.4%. We're a little bit higher, obviously at 6.4, but
John Wycliffe has suggested that we should get back into surplus a year or two earlier than 2016. Do you see merit in that idea?
I'd like to get back as soon as possible. I mean, fundamentally, we had a strong balance sheet when we went into the global financial crisis, and that put us in good stead, because from a private sector point of view, we know that not only the debt levels were too high, but they were all largely from offshore finance. So I think when you look at it, we've been very committed to making sure that our debt levels stay under 30% of GDP at their highest point, and that as soon as we can start building assets on the balance sheet, we'll do it. So from that point of view, yes, you know, we'd like to do that then. I mean, just looking at the numbers last week that the Finance Minister put out, the slightly lower growth this year, probably a reflection of the what has been a very weak international position, really, and stickiness for probably everybody, but equally, you know, they're upgrading their growth, Treasury upgrading the growth forecast for 2011, I think, 3.5%, and net on net, it took us to roughly the same place in about 3 years.
Has there been any communication between you and your office in 21?
Right, between Dominion Post and...
finance stuff.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
Given New Zealand's relative debt position in the OECD, we're down the bottom end, if you like, in terms of gearing.
Yeah.
Isn't it a bit rough for S&P to put us on negative credit?
Well, there's nothing's changed from the conversation that the Finance Minister had with them 2 weeks ago, where they didn't express any great concern. That's why, you know, we can draw no other conclusion than the international environment has changed. And with the position in Ireland, that has had an impact on their assessment of countries that have debt, over-reliance on debt. What I will say, though, is to your point, you're absolutely right. The way it's been positioned by S&P and other rating agencies to us is if your gross debt to GDP or net debt to GDP is less than 30%, then you are in a small group of countries for which the rating agencies have no concerns in that regard. And that is absolutely where New Zealand is positioned, with a very small group of other countries, Korea, Australia, and I think one or two others. If you're under 60% of GDP, then their assessment is it'll have some impact on growth, but you're certainly not their biggest problem children. And if you're at 100% of GDP, like a number of economies and some more, then that's of much greater interest to them. So nothing that we've seen has changed from our point of view. In fact, if anything, our position looks stronger from our point of view. We accept that we've had to take the earthquake on the balance sheet, except tax revenue's been a little bit weaker this year than we anticipated, but we're expecting to be strong in future years.
But following up on Brian's point, I mean, Treasury has said get there a bit quicker. Doesn't this send you the message, get there a bit quicker? Surplus?
Well, look, the surplus is always a difference between two very, very large numbers. Sometimes they're a little bit out of your control, like tax revenue, when things are going badly, it all compounds in itself, and when it's going well, it does the opposite the other way. So look, at the end of the day, I think if we stick to a very modest new budget spending component, and I've described $1.1 billion as that, then over time, government spending as a percentage of GDP falls, and we will return to surplus. Now, we'll continue to work on doing that as fast as we practically can.
Mr. Whitehead also suggested that you would need to look or might usefully look at some of the automatic increases, uptake and indexation and so on. Do you agree with him on that?
Yes, and the Finance Minister has been looking at that issue. So one of the factors that's difficult for Bill English is that while he can control new budget spending where it sits within that $1.1 billion, there are so many other factors that fall outside of that. So if you take early childhood education, for example, actually the spending on that has been increasing dramatically, and because of the way that the formulas drive an increase in expenditure. So we are working as aggressively and as practically as we can to try and move more into the $1.1 billion. Now that makes life even harder for the government, because ministers have even less money to spend. But where expenditure practically can be reclassified as part of the new budget spending component, within reason we are doing that.
Have you had any word or communication with NZ Wong?
No.
Are you expecting to do back to Parliament this week?
No, it wouldn't be my expectation. I don't know when she'll be due back, but my expectation is that in due course we'll have a report from Parliamentary Services. That'll go to the Speaker, of course. She'll get a copy of that report. that one, I assume, would put her in a position to be able to answer the questions that you will no doubt pose me.
So you think she should stay away until the report comes out?
Well, I haven't had that discussion with her, but one hopes that the report will come relatively quickly and she'll be in a position to answer your questions.
Can we expect to see her?
You expected in a couple of weeks. It's closer.
This is week two, isn't it?
Is her leave from Parliament really justified just because she's got questions to answer? I mean, shouldn't she be back doing her work?
I want her to be able to answer those questions directly and with the full facts in front of her. And at the moment, she's unable to do that until she gets that report.
Well, Phil Heatley came back to Parliament. Remember, I think he was back when he was still under investigation. He'd resigned. What's the difference? And why can't she just say no comment and still be back down here doing her job?
Because I'm pretty sure you'll find no comments not acceptable to you. I mean, there's a generic you. And secondly, as we saw with Phil Heatley, actually some of the answers he gave initially weren't right, because he didn't have all the facts. And when he did have all the facts, he was in a position to answer them more clearly. So at the end of the day, I expect my MPs to front up. I'll always be demanding that they do that. But I also expect them to be in receipt of the facts before they give those answers.
But is this a precedent that an MP gets into trouble for one way or t'other and gets sent off on 2 weeks' leave, that they don't actually have to front up? And I take your argument about having the information, but isn't it, you know, as much about her being back down here actually doing the job that she's been paid to do as well?
Well, she can't give you answers because she doesn't have those facts. You will become very frustrated.
Isn't
so
though?
So might be not better to frustrate until we have the information.
Having someone stay away from Parliament because their answers might upset the press.
Well, we always
an extraordinary.
We always try and please the press, Rob. You know us. Look, the reality is that we have asked for, or she has requested, a formal inquiry. At the time that I spoke to her, except I haven't done that for a week or so, she did not have that information from her. So in due course she will, and when she does, she'll need to answer those questions.
But as an electorate MP, doesn't she have a duty to represent her constituents at Parliament?
Well, I'm sure she's representing them one way or another.
Is there any way back for her as a minister? I mean, there are these unanswered questions. Is there some way that those could be answered to your satisfaction if she could actually come back as a minister?
Well, not before the end of 2011, so it would be subject to us winning the second term before that matter could even be considered. And whether that's possible in the future would be subject to a number of things, not least than being what the findings of the report are.
Well, so what we know about this so far, that her husband conducted business on that one trip we're talking about,
correct,
was enough for her to lose her ministerial warrant.
Correct. Well, she resigned her ministerial warrant.
Well, yeah.
And I believe that's appropriate.
When might you replace her, or might you not replace her at all? When might you have a little reshuffle?
Well, I'm definitely going to replace her. And it would have been my expectation that decision would be made this week. It still might be, but you'll appreciate the issues on the West Coast that consuming my energy at the moment.
Greg Muir stepped down from the pumpkin patch board, and the Securities Commission's looking into COVID finance.
Yep.
Do you still have confidence in him on the Tourism New Zealand board?
I do, yes.
You're not worried about the investigations or anything?
Well, I can't comment about whether the investigations are into Mr. Muir, because I'm not sure that is actually the way it's been characterised. I understand that there may be investigations, Securities Commission may be having investigations into directors of Hanover Finance. Whether that includes Mr. Muir, I'm not sure.
Can I just go back to Standard & Poor's?
Yeah.
How confident are you that they will not follow through with downgrade, and are there any immediate implications for how much it costs us to borrow?
I can't answer the first question because I simply don't know. I've had enough of a briefing on that. But as I say, I know it was certainly met with surprise by the finance minister, given the conversations he had with them 2 weeks earlier. Is it costing a bit more? My sense is that the rather fragile nature of these national financial markets are likely to mean spreads are moving up slightly. The borrowing cost for New Zealanders is rising slightly, but Finance Minister hasn't indicated to me that that's causing any great concerns or is of a significant note specific to New Zealand.
So if you're right that it's the international environment that's going to expect Scotland and Balls to be moving across all economies?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think what the Standard & Poor's are saying is that they are focusing on countries with high levels of overall indebtedness. Now, that is true of New Zealand. Their external liabilities are very high, and that they are largely sourced from foreigners. What's also true is the makeup of those borrowings is largely private sector driven. There's only a very small component that is publicly sector driven, and in that regard, that has not changed.
So our questions are really off the mark, aren't they, saying get back to surplus perhaps by earlier than 2016. Shouldn't you be making some efforts to ensure that private sector debt is reduced in New Zealand?
And I think it's fair to say the government has moved on that. One of the reasons that we moved towards changes in the housing taxation of rental housing, one of the reasons we moved to increasing GST and reducing personal taxes, a number of other moves we made in the budget, were all aimed at ultimately putting the right incentives in the economy for New Zealanders to save more and become less reliant on foreign borrowings. It's also true that in our view, if we can lift overall wage rates and therefore productivity in the economy, that we can again build our own savings pool. And lastly, of course, the government has commissioned savings and tax working group or savings working group, which is going to report to us by the end of the year, I think, or even the new year. And it may well be that the focus of Budget 2011 is based off a view that we want to increase savings to a high, national savings to a higher level, but it's too early to determine that specifically in the single report.
Is Hiki Prater in line for a ministerial request?
Look, I haven't had an opportunity to consider that matter, but in due course I will.
So she might not, if there's a position this week, it might not give you, it won't give you.
I don't know. Honestly, if it hadn't been for the matters on the West Coast, I might have had more time to consider it, but they've really been consuming all my time.